Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Nutrition Diva podcast. I'm your host, Monica Reinagel, and this week I got an email from Donald who wrote, "Alcohol appears to provide some health benefits if consumed in moderation, in particular red wine or beer. What about non-alcoholic beer and wine? Can you gain the same benefits from these beverages without the hazards? Are there other important considerations?" Well, Donald's email made me realize that it is time to revisit the subject of alcohol and your health, both to clear up some common misperceptions, as well as to update you on some new research. So first, those common misperceptions. Despite its reputation, red wine is really not any healthier than other alcoholic beverages. Now, I know that much has been made of the resveratrol in red wine. That's a polyphenolic antioxidant that's been shown to have some health benefits. But red wine is not the only way to get resveratrol. Unfermented grapes and grape juice, blueberries, bilberries, pistachios, peanuts, and peanut butter are also good sources. But more to the point, the amount of resveratrol that's been shown in studies to produce those health benefits is far beyond what you could likely get from your diet, much less just from drinking red wine. And by the way, beer also contains polyphenols, along with a variety of other nutrients. According to researcher and beer enthusiast Charles Bamforth, a half liter of beer can provide up to 25% of the daily requirement for niacin and vitamin C, up to 50% of your B6, and an entire day's worth of folate and B12, along with various other vitamins and minerals. Margot Denke, another researcher, points out that the hops and the barley used to make beer also contribute a significant amount of antioxidants. And studies have found that you absorb about the same amount of polyphenols from wine or beer. So, in answer to Donald's question, the antioxidants and the other nutrients typically found in beer and wine could also be gotten from non-alcoholic wine and beer. And there's even some interesting research on the benefits of non-alcoholic beer as a recovery drink after exercise. Take that, Gatorade. However, the health benefits that have been attributed to moderate alcohol consumption are not coming from the antioxidants or the nutrients. They are primarily coming from the alcohol itself. In small amounts, ethanol appears to have anti-inflammatory effects, and it reduces the tendency of blood to form clots. Moderate drinkers, therefore, are less likely to die of heart disease or coronary events than those who drink more heavily, or, for that matter, than those who drink nothing at all. Now, in epidemiology, this is known as a J-shaped curve, and it's not at all uncommon. Where small amounts of a substance may reduce your risk, but then at a certain point, the curve starts heading the other way, and then greater consumption leads to increased risk. Now, because heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, reducing deaths from heart disease is pretty impactful in terms of reducing all-cause mortality, which is your chance of dying from anything at all in a given year. And the reduction in deaths from heart disease is mostly what drives the reduction in all-cause mortality that we see with moderate alcohol consumption. Now, on the other hand, when we look at the link between alcohol consumption and breast cancer, we do not see a J-shaped curve. Drinking alcohol in any amount appears to increase the risk of breast cancer. But because fewer people die from breast cancer than from heart disease, that doesn't have as big an impact on all-cause mortality statistics. Clearly, all-cause mortality figures are of limited value in assessing any individual's risk. As always, the devil is in the details. Someone with a family history of breast cancer, for example, may assess the risk-benefit ratio of consuming alcohol differently than someone with a family history of heart disease. If you want to see real change, you need to be consistent, and hair care is no exception. Vegamore makes sticking to your hair care routine easy so that you can actually see the results you've always wanted. With a monthly subscription of their Grow Hair Serum, you'll never run low on the products that you need, plus it saves you money. For best results, you want to use this for at least 3 months to see visibly fuller, healthier, and thicker looking hair. I'm only on month 2, but the routine is super simple, and I like the way my hair is looking. I also appreciate that Vegamore products are free of harsh chemicals and are also 100% cruelty-free. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. And for a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/diva and then use the code DIVA at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/diva and the code DIVA to save 20% on your first order. Up until recently, the generally accepted wisdom, which was reflected in our nation's dietary guidelines and other public health advice, was that moderate consumption of alcohol by healthy, non-pregnant adults was essentially harmless. And moderate consumption was defined as no more than 2 drinks per day for men and 1 for women. Drinking more than that is clearly associated with increased health risks. In 2018, however, a new meta-analysis, which was conducted as part of the Global Burden of Disease study, caused a pretty big splash when they concluded that there was actually no amount of alcohol that could be considered safe, much less beneficial. In other words, no more J-shaped curve. But wait, then, just last year, in 2022, an even newer meta-analysis, as part of the same Global Burden of Disease study, seemed to reverse course again, saying that for certain groups, moderate drinking was equivalent to not drinking at all in terms of the effects on all-cause mortality. So what changed between 2018 and 2022? Well, they did add a few more years of data to the data set, but the biggest difference was in the methodology that they used. There's a lot of variation in how alcohol consumption affects mortality in various parts of the world, and age also makes a huge difference. Therefore, running a risk assessment on the entire global population is likely to produce results that apply to almost no one. So in this latest analysis, they looked at alcohol consumption and all-cause mortality by global region, and they broke it out by age and sex, and this resulted in a much more nuanced picture. In the show notes for today, I've included a link to that chart if you want to see what level of consumption equals 0 increased risk or non-drinker equivalence for you, given where you live and how old you are. Now, just a note of caution, in this analysis, they define a standard drink as containing 10 grams of ethanol alcohol. But here in the United States, we count 14 grams of ethanol as a standard drink. So when looking at that chart, just remember to adjust accordingly. 1.4 standard drinks in the Global Burden of Disease chart equals 1 standard US drink. So here are some of the most notable findings to come out of this new analysis. The younger you are, the more risky drinking appears to be. So a 49-year-old male living in North America who has 1 drink a day has the same risk as a 49-year-old male who doesn't drink at all. But for a 25-year-old North American male, any alcohol at all does increase his risk of death. Now, again, we're talking about all-cause mortality. A 49-year-old male is more likely to die of heart disease than a 25-year-old male. So the beneficial effects of alcohol on heart health are going to be more detectable in that age cohort. A 25-year-old male, on the other hand, is much more likely to die in an automobile accident. And the detrimental effects of alcohol on driving are going to be much more visible in that age cohort. So even with this increased level of detail, these data don't tell us everything we need to know about an individual's risk from alcohol consumption. But the Global Burden of Disease studies inform a lot of public health guidelines and policy, and more nuance is likely to lead to more appropriate guidance than a one-size-fits-none approach. Now, look, I want to be very clear. I am not here to make a case for or against the consumption of alcohol. There are plenty of others who are happy to do that. My goal is simply to give you better information with which to make an informed decision about alcohol consumption, especially if one of the things that you're basing that decision on is the impact of drinking on your health risks. Now, another part of making informed decisions is being aware of how much alcohol you are actually taking in. Now, you may have learned that a 12-ounce beer counts as a standard drink here in the U.S. However, that assumes that your beer is 5% alcohol by volume, and craft beers can easily be northward of 7 or even 8 ABV, in which case that same 12-ounce can or bottle might actually be 1.5 standard drinks, and a 16-ounce draft might be more than 2 standard drinks. And the ABV of wines, spirits, and cocktails can also vary widely. Members of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, known as DISCUS, this is a trade organization that represents most of the major liquor brands. Those members have voted to voluntarily start including serving facts on liquor packages, including things like those single-serve cocktails in a can that have become more popular lately. So these labels are going to include information on how much alcohol that serving contains, as well as things like calories and carbohydrates. And you should be seeing those labels in stores by June of 2024. Now, in the meantime, if you want to calculate how much alcohol your favorite cocktail or craft beer or wine contains, or how many standard drinks you need to count it as, I built a little calculator for you. You know I love a spreadsheet. And you'll find a link to that also in the show notes for today. Thanks to Donald for that question. And if you have a question you'd like me to answer, you can email me at nutrition@quickanddirtytips.com. And you can also leave me a voicemail at 443-961-6206. I'd also like to invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Change Academy, where Brock Armstrong and I explore the art and science of behavior change. You can find it on all the major podcast platforms. So wherever you're listening to me right now, just scroll on up to the search bar and type in Change Academy. Nutrition Diva is a Quick and Dirty Tips podcast. It's audio engineered by Nathan Semmes with script editing by Adam Cecil. Thanks also to Morgan Christensen, Davidin Tomlin, Holly Hutchings, and Cameron Lacey. That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week.